Hey there, it's Joshua. Did you know 1A is possible because of you? Yes, you. When you give to your local NPR station before the year ends, you're building support for the NPR programs you have come to know, love, and depend on. Programs like 1A. And you're also supporting local journalism in your community. So don't wait. Donate. Do your part in sharing the conversation and supporting the public radio system with a year-end gift to your local NPR station. Just visit donate.npr.org/1A to give. And thanks. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. There is no such thing as free shipping. Moving packages quickly has a cost, and that cost comes out somewhere. The investigative outlet Reveal recently reported that the cost may well be a human one. The rate of serious injuries at Amazon's shipping warehouses, or fulfillment centers, is more than double the national industry average. The conditions have led to worker strikes and walkouts, including in Minnesota. That is where 1A's Arfi Getty attended a workers' rights meeting. William Stoltz was at that meeting.
I'm a picker at Amazon's warehouse. I've been there for about 2.5 years. The attention that we've been able to get is, I think, an indication that there's a lot of people out there who are aware of the issues that we're facing, especially around the speed of the work, the high number of injuries. Like, I've seen so many friends of mine come and go through this job where, you know, people leaving with, in some cases, like back or knee injuries or hand injuries that they'll have for the rest of their lives. And so, like, I think, you know, for as much as people love to order on Amazon, it also shows, like, there's a lot of support for Amazon to treat its workers better.
How typical is William's story? What does it really take to provide us the convenience of speedy service? Is it a price we're willing to pay? Joining us from the Center for Investigative Reporting in Emeryville, California, is Melissa Lewis, a data reporter for Reveal. Melissa, welcome to 1A.
Hello, thank you.
Joining us from KPCC in Pasadena is BuzzFeed News investigative reporter Ken Bensinger. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
We should note we did invite Amazon to take part in this program. It released a statement in multiple parts, part of which I will read in just a moment. But Melissa Lewis, let me start with you. And that clip we heard from William, does that sound familiar based on your reporting?
It does indeed. I find, for example, that the Minnesota facility for which we have information has a serious injury rate over 3 times that of industry average.
Now, a lot of what we're talking about in terms of industries has to do with, or in terms of injuries, has to do with workers trying to meet quotas in terms of how many packages they move. Can you tell us a little bit more, Melissa, about these quotas, some of what they have to meet?
Yes, the quotas from the people we've interviewed have said are impossible to meet, especially at the durations they're working over the holidays. Some people are working 12-hour shifts, and even when they are trained on the correct form for lifting, when they sustain that level of activity for so long, they're unable to keep themselves safe and to follow those rules, even if they're aware of them.
Ken, I would like to get your reaction to a clip we heard, or a message we got from a former employee at an Amazon fulfillment center. Here's what Sharon left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Sharon. I'm from Baltimore County. I worked for Amazon as a problem solver, sorter, and stower, and a few other positions. In regards to how they treat their employees, they basically treat you like it's a sweatshop. They demoralize you. They put you down. Very seldom do you hear that you do a great job. If you're injured on the job, God help you, because they'll just try to patch you up, tell you that you don't need to go see your doctor, that they'll take care of you, and they don't. I've worked for a lot of companies, and I think Amazon is the worst company I've ever worked for, and I wouldn't advise anybody to work there.
Sharon, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Ken, how much does Sharon's view reflect some of the workers you've interviewed?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who work for Amazon who aren't exactly ecstatic about it, but I also would be unfair to say that there aren't those that love it. Amazon has a very specific, unique culture, and Amazonians, as the employees call themselves, sort of come in two flavors, those who love it and those who hate it. And I will say that it is a culture that thrives on a more critical approach to work, and that often sort of cascades down to the lower levels where people are doing manual labor in a way that just feels harsh and unrelenting. And so the people we've talked to for our reporting at BuzzFeed and at ProPublica with whom we're working have expressed the feeling that they feel like cogs in a machine, or they feel sort of disposable. There are not as many incentives for good behavior, and there's lots of fears and sort of paranoia about getting fired or called out if you don't do everything perfectly. So I think that it's very reflective of the whole way the company runs. I think mid-level managers feel that as well, although they probably have higher upside. But remember, this is a company that famously doesn't, it's a tech company that doesn't have free lunch. Essentially, the only thing free employees get is aspirin and Tylenol at this company. So it's not known for its incredible generosity to its employees in general.
Ken, can you be a little more specific and give me an example of what one of those cultural aspects of the fulfillment centers is that might kind of illuminate what makes this different? I mean, if I'm the kind of person who goes to take a job at a fulfillment center and comes to hate it, can you give me an example of one of the kinds of things I'd encounter that would push me toward hating it?
Yeah. So Joshua, to be clear, my experience is a little bit in fulfillment centers, but it's more in what's called delivery stations, which is actually the next piece down.
Gotcha.
To the untrained eye, it might look like a fulfillment center, but it's actually sort of the, if you can imagine that the life cycle of a Amazon shipment, it goes from the fulfillment center to a delivery station where it's then loaded onto vans and then delivered to your house.
Ah.
And within the delivery station and on the road, what you see are workers who are constantly reminded that they have to get things done faster and that every sort of daily success in achieving that goal is met with a larger goal the next day. And I think that is something I hear over and over again. We hear that over and over again, is workers who feel that no matter how good they do, they just get rewarded with more work. Their success just creates a higher baseline and the feeling that they will eventually reach a failure point. I think that is very reflective of the way they do things, the feeling that the reward for good behavior is pushing you further. And people ultimately tend to fail. Sometimes they fail by getting hurt. Sometimes they fail by not making these goals and being written up and ultimately fired. And sometimes in the case of delivery, which is our focus, the failure can mean that they hit something or someone and people can actually get very hurt or even die.
How many deliveries per day are we talking about, Ken?
So you can measure it in two ways. You can measure it by shipments. That is sort of how many packages they're delivering or how many stops they make. There's a lot of overlap, but what we hear from people doing this kind of work is on a typical day, they might get as many as 250 or 300 packages to deliver. And so I've certainly heard of cases where there's 250 independent stops per day, which if you break it down is maybe about 2 minutes per stop all day long. It might not sound hard driving a truck, stopping out and getting to the front door, but try doing it 250 times in 8 hours. People get repetitive injuries. They get, slip and falls all the time. People delivering packages for Amazon very routinely get attacked by dogs. There have been cases of assaults, carjackings where people beat up or menace drivers with guns and steal their trucks. So it's actually a fairly hazardous job.
I do want to continue our conversation about the conditions that these workers are facing when we continue with Melissa Lewis, a data reporter for Reveal, and Ken Bensinger, an investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News. We'll also meet a fulfillment center employee and workers' rights advocate in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Bayer. From advances in health to innovations in agriculture, Bayer is advancing science for a better life. Because someone with heart issues should still be able to have their heart jump with joy. Because a farmer using less water should still be able to grow their crops. Because someone getting older should still be able to act young. At Bayer, this is why we science.
The NBC sitcom Friends turned 25 this year. And it's still here. Right now, it's one of Netflix's biggest shows. But does it hold up?
The greatest failure, I think, of the show is that it's not funny.
What our enduring relationship with friends says about us. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're talking about the working conditions at Amazon's warehouses or fulfillment centers and in its delivery systems ahead of the busy holiday season. We don't know a ton about these warehouses, but according to Amazon, conditions there are not just good, they're great.
We work really hard and we're kind of intense.
We sweat, we bust our butt, and if I didn't enjoy what I was doing, I wouldn't be here.
And the benefits were excellent. I've never had full dental and vision and medical or any of that stuff, and I got that right out of the gate, first day.
It's a really trans-friendly company. My manager has been a really big advocate for me.
You're gonna pay for me to go to school so I can eventually leave the company? Like, that's insane.
That was part of an Amazon ad that's been airing this year. Let's bring in someone who has firsthand experience working at Amazon as we continue our conversation with Ken Bensinger of BuzzFeed News and Melissa Lewis of Reveal. Hafsa Hassan is a worker at MSP1, an Amazon fulfillment center in Shakopee, Minnesota, which is southwest of Minneapolis. Hafsa, welcome to 1A.
Hi.
Hafsa, what are your thoughts on that Amazon ad we just heard? Your reactions to it?
Everyone's valid, definitely, to their opinion. I'm glad that, you know, all those associates have great experiences, but the reality is that some really don't. Some people end up getting hurt, and it's something that they have to live with the rest of their lives, unfortunately.
How did you come to work at a fulfillment center?
I basically was in my first year of college trying to pay for tuition, which is kind of expensive, and I was told by a friend, hey, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm at a fulfillment center, and this is a friend that I went to high school with. She was like, if you're looking for a job, you should try this out. And I was like, fine. So I applied. My plan was to just stay the first 3 months, which was like during summer, and then go back to school. But then I kind of found that I could balance school along with the work because it worked with my schedule. So, yeah.
What were you studying in school?
Public health.
When did you start to realize, what were your expectations, before we get to your realizations, what were your expectations of what the job would be like before you started doing it?
I mean, I expected to definitely be physical labor, expected to be, you know, exhausting. That's what I signed up for. I mean, it's night shift, 12-hour shifts. So that I knew already out of the gate, that that's something that I expected.
So talk about your day. You were going to school and working at this fulfillment center on a 12-hour shift? That sounds like it sounds like you would really have to squeeze in time for study and sleep.
Yeah, so I mean, I remember even at one point where I had to sign up for a lab because it was pretty much the only lab that was left, which was 8 a.m. So I would leave work at 6 a.m. and I would have to be at school by 8 a.m. to make sure that I get to that lab, which was 3 hours. So, I mean, I've kind of figured out my tricks here and there on how to utilize my time and, you know, save my energy here and there, you know.
When do you sleep?
Whenever I can.
That's going to make it hard to work a 12-hour shift when you're dealing with, I'm guessing, machinery that's moving fast and computers and conveyor belts and packages, and that must take a toll after a while.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's something I signed up for. When I did apply for that application, I knew what I was signing up for. But the thing is that what people don't, like, it's the other stuff. It's the extra stuff that people haven't signed up for that makes it so hard and unsafe for many people to work in fulfillment centers, like MSP1, for example.
Give me an example of what that other stuff includes.
So I can, like, personally speak for myself. This is around 2017. I was a SLAM operator, and I was, this was Cyber Monday to be specific. So
I'm sorry, a SLAM operator? What is that?
Yeah. So this is basically the last point where boxes go through right before they get labels to check if the boxes have all the items they need, to check if the boxes are missing items.
Oh, okay.
And then that label where the box is going to with the customer's name, customer's address, all that stuff, that is where the person double checks to see if it's going to the right place or whatever. So that's what I was doing that night. And it was Cyber Monday to be specific, so you can only imagine how busy it is. You know, people are ordering pretty much the whole day. So I got injured that night because it was very repetitive, and I expected to not be the only person at that SLAM line, But it turned out it was just me, which was, you know, crazy.
How many people would you normally expect to be on that line?
Usually, especially when jams happen, it would be one person at the slam line and one person helping out to straighten out the boxes. But that was not what happened. I was pretty much the only one that was there. But once I started complaining that I am experiencing pain, that's when I was told, yeah, you can go and switch out and you can go pack. But I was like, no, I don't think I can go pack. I need to go to AmCare, which is an on-site clinic, and get treated.
What kind of injury are we talking about?
Lower back pain.
Okay. As someone who suffers from lower back pain, I can definitely attest to how terrible that is. So you decided to keep at it, to keep working and not go to the clinic?
No, I definitely made sure that I go to the clinic and not necessarily even ask for permission, because I have the rights to go to AmCare, but just let my manager know, hey, I'm not feeling well right now. I'm going to go downstairs and I'm going to go and get myself checked out at AmCare.
Did that get weird at all in terms of you walking off the line and going to get care?
No, because I was very persistent, and I think they knew that I wasn't budging, so I just went straight to AmCare.
Now, we did reach out to Amazon to be part of this conversation. They gave us a statement on working conditions at their fulfillment centers. Here is the part of the written statement we received that deals specifically with the safety at fulfillment centers. The statement reads, quote, "It's inaccurate to say that our FCs, fulfillment centers, that our FCs are unsafe. There's a dramatic level of under-recording of safety incidents across the industry. We recognized this in 2016 and began to take an aggressive stance on recording injuries, no matter how big or small. We believe so strongly in the environment provided for fulfillment center employees, including our safety culture, that we offer public tours where anyone can come see for themselves one of our sites and its working conditions firsthand." Unquote. That is part of the statement that Amazon sent us about conditions at their fulfillment centers. Hafsa, what do you think of that statement when you hear it?
To say the least, disgusting, simply because, I mean, the motto is, we want you guys to leave the same way you guys came in. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Many people end up getting injured. They don't get the resources that they're supposed to be getting once they go to AmCare. I mean, they get some people get treatment and all that, but when they go to the doctors and stuff, they end up having to pay bills out of their own pockets. Sometimes bills that, you know, weigh heavy down on their pockets, and some people end up having to quit. And in my case, I got written warnings out of nowhere, and the manager never even communicated. This is right after I got injured. So when those things happen, the company, from a worker's perspective, you that's injured, you seem to kind of feel like a liability instead of someone who is an asset to the team. So to say the least, it's actually disgusting.
You feel like a liability instead of an asset?
Yeah, especially when you get injured, you communicate to the manager, hey, this is what's happening. You have proof because you've went to the doctor and you bring those paperwork in. But then in my case, and not just my case, many other people's cases, people start getting warnings. Sometimes managers communicate the warnings. Sometimes managers don't communicate the warnings. And then one night or one day you get that last warning and then you get kicked out that door.
Melissa, what about you? Your reaction to the statement that we read?
It's interesting that they say that they are exceptional in their safety, and that is their argument for their resistance to, say, participate in the conversation, and that they offer up a tour of the facility because, for one thing, we asked them for clarifying data to do our reporting better. It should be noted that I've found a document published under the Obama administration saying that these very documents we've been fighting for, these 300 A's that tell us how many hours were worked and how many people died or were sick or were injured, were eventually intended to be published to the web by everybody by default. And that's actually been rolled back under the current administration. And it's exactly that kind of information that would allow us to make a more fair comparison. So we are trying to be as comprehensive as possible in analyzing not just the number of injuries, but also the the number of people employed. When we presented our findings about, like, timing, for example, that prime week, their deals week in midsummer, and then over this week of Cyber Monday that Hafsa was just describing, those are the, for the facilities that we examined, the weeks with by far the greatest number of injuries as of last year. And their only response to us was that that only goes up because they have so many more people working for them. And I would love to know that base rate. That is essential information, and yet they declined to provide that. And I would say that an industry leader, or somebody who wants to position themselves as an industry leader in safety, should position themselves as an industry leader in transparency and provide this information rather than fighting, as has been reported by their own employees, fighting those employees on getting that information.
You've gotten a wide array of comments from those of you who work in delivery either with Amazon or in any of the peripheral organizations that support Amazon's supply chain. Laura wrote on our Facebook page, "My husband is a 60-year-old part-time rural postal carrier. With the increased package load, he has worked every day, 9 to 12 hours daily, since Thanksgiving, with no sight of a day off until Christmas Day. No health benefits as an RPC. He drives 100-plus miles per day." Contrast that with what Chris wrote. Chris wrote on our Facebook page, "I work in an Amazon facility, and it's literally the easiest job I've ever had. Minimum of two people unloading every truck. At most places, that is a one-person job. They provide on-site health care if you are in pain and give you plenty of paid time off if you need a break." Ken, we got some comments from Amazon Fulfillment Center workers who've had different accounts of the benefits, but what, if anything, did the workers you spoke to say about the kinds of benefits that they get, particularly the ones we heard mentioned in that ad?
Yeah, I mean, workers often, at least the ones doing delivering, often aren't aware of what benefits are available to them. And I've had some tell me that they were surprised to discover they had things like paid time off or certain kinds of healthcare benefits. So certainly at some of the grittier parts of the company, there doesn't seem to be great communication about what's available. But I also think it's worth noting that this is a place where Amazon also indirectly employs a lot of people and therefore doesn't offer them benefits. There are many, many employees or workers doing jobs for Amazon through contractors that make them employees of the contractor rather than Amazon. And those people don't get the same kind of benefits, whether you consider them gold-plated, bronze-plated, or dirt-plated that Amazon employees have. These are contractors for third-party companies that Amazon hires to do a lot of its work. In my area, I've been focusing on delivery. That's particularly true. The vast majority of the packages that Amazon itself delivers are delivered by contractor employees of other companies. Those companies can offer up whatever kind of benefits they want. Some of them, in fact, do offer good benefits, and some offer almost none. Some, in fact, defy legal mandates, don't even carry the proper workers' comp insurance. We've seen workers get injured on the job, and when they file workers' comp claims, discover that the company wasn't properly insured, and then they're really in trouble because they're facing massive bills and often end up in personal bankruptcy because of it. So it gets really gritty out there. It gets really rough.
How does that not come back to Amazon, though, Ken? I mean, if they're hiring contractors that don't comply, what you're basically saying is they're not complying with the law because you have to have a certain amount of workers' comp insurance. How does that not come back and bite Amazon in the throat?
Well, Amazon believes very strongly. It claims that it is not legally liable for whatever its contractors do. This is a central piece of our reporting. We find that Amazon not only makes that argument in court, it also includes language in its contracts with these companies that says that if anything goes wrong, if they don't pay the employees properly, if they don't carry the proper insurance, if one of their employees goes out and assaults a customer in the street or anything, that's not Amazon's responsibility. And they rely on the fact that it's a contractor with its own employees, and therefore Amazon claims to have an arm's length relationship. Now, you might say, Joshua, look, they're delivering Amazon packages only. They go to work in a van that says Amazon on it. They go to a warehouse that is an Amazon warehouse. They wear Amazon clothing. Amazon tells them what route to drive, and Amazon dictates so many aspects of their job. But Amazon will say, well, we have nothing to do with that employee. We don't hire them or fire them, and we don't directly dictate their salary, and therefore whatever happens to them is not our responsibility. That has been their position over and over again in court. And in fact, they go so far as saying that the contractor should indemnify them if anyone even finds them liable. So if a court were to rule in favor of a plaintiff suing Amazon for something like this, Amazon would go after the contractor to pay it back for any losses it suffered.
We'll continue in just a moment with Ken Bensinger of BuzzFeed News, Melissa Lewis of Reveal, and Amazon Fulfillment Center employee Hafsa Hassan. We'll get to some more questions, including where this goes from here and how this affects other services, like the U.S. Postal Service. Stay close.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rothy's. Rothy's are stylish, sustainable shoes made for life on the go. Carefully crafted from repurposed plastic water bottles, Rothy's are fully machine washable. Best of all, they're comfortable and have zero break-in period thanks to their seamlessly knit design. Plus, Rothy's always come with free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes. Rothy's are available in a wide array of colors and patterns. Find your perfect pair at rothys.com/1A.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Don't forget to do your part and donate to your local NPR station before the end of the year. And guess what? Supporting public radio just got easier with Text to Give. To get started with your donation to an NPR member station, visit donate.npr.org/1A. Or just text the word give to the number 49648. We'll send you a text message with a link where you can find your local station and make your contribution. Message and data rates may apply. You can visit npr.org/smsterms for privacy and text message terms. So, don't wait. Donate. Do your part in sharing the conversation and supporting the public radio system. Thanks. Back now to our conversation with Ken Bensinger, Melissa Lewis, and Hafsa Hassan. We got different comments, Hafsa, in terms of what consumers should be doing in response to this, well, the role that Amazon subscribers should be involved in. Jane emailed, I use Amazon all the time, but I want Amazon to treat their workers much better. I've often wished someone would organize a customer boycott in support of a healthy working environment. I would be very happy to boycott Amazon for however long it took. My guess is if enough people did it, it wouldn't take that long. We need an organizer. On the other hand, Sarah emailed, you can't expect the consumer who often doesn't have any money to buy more expensive things for their home instead of ordering off of Amazon. The fact that this is even a consumer issue blows my mind. Jeff Bezos and Amazon make an insane amount of money. This is clearly a labor issue that needs to be regulated by the federal government. And the fact that they have not done anything is immoral. Hafsa, what do you think? Do you think this is an issue that customers need to take the lead on, that the federal government needs to take the lead on? Who would be the most helpful to you in advocating better conditions?
Anyone that says that they're a leader, basically. Anyone that is appointing themselves as a leader, saying that I've come in here and I, you know, want to make this place a safer place for people. So whether it be the managers, whether it be the senior ops managers, like general managers, whatever it might be, even Jeff Bezos himself should take responsibility and actually just investigate and see what is it that they can do to make sure that that model of we want you guys to leave the same way you guys came in is something that is like lived by and not just said.
The accountability aspect gets to something else that William Stoltz told us. He was the worker at the Minnesota Fulfillment Center that we heard earlier in the program. Here's what else William had to say.
I understand why people like ordering from Amazon. I'm not saying that people shouldn't do it. It's nice to get, you know, your stuff in 2 days. But anytime there's a convenience, like it has a cost. And it's like, in our case, like a human cost. And I just, I there are a lot of things I like about the job. I like the people, and I just believe that, Amazon can find out a way to make money, shipping people to stuff fast without creating like a huge trail of injuries behind it.
That was William Stoltz, who's a picker at a fulfillment center in Minnesota. Ken, I'd like you to respond to Miranda, who emailed, "Help me here. I'm really struggling with everybody suddenly being all upset and up in arms about Amazon and how it treats its employees when so many industries are exactly the same. The restaurant industry, and my experience with it, sounds much worse than Amazon. No benefits, getting hurt on the job, low wages, all of it. Yet we go out to eat all the time and don't give this any thought. So if you're going to stop buying from Amazon, great. But are you going to stop going to restaurants?" Ken?
I don't think I'll stop going to restaurants, and I probably won't stop buying from Amazon, but I certainly am more mindful about what I'm doing both at restaurants and at Amazon. You know, I had a conversation with someone recently, and I was talking about how an 84-year-old grandmother was killed when an Amazon van crashed into her 3 days before Christmas a few years ago. It has, you know, obviously caused massive tumult in this family. The person next to me said, "It's a sad story, but I still want my Amazon package tomorrow." And I thought that was very telling. I would argue that potentially it is worse in the restaurant industry. People in the restaurant industry don't frequently get run over by vehicles or killed or crushed under forklifts, as Reveal pointed out. The difference is that we have a different kind of interaction with package delivery, with purchasing things online, than we do with the intimate feeling of a restaurant experience. But in fact, Amazon is becoming part of the fabric of our daily lives. And what people are doing is they're voting with their clicking finger. They're deciding that they care more about the convenience of getting things immediately than they do about what that means for workers or actually just people walking down the street. That's a conscious choice that consumers make. We are all sort of part of it for the most part. It's very difficult, as this kind of coverage we've done and other outlets have done. It's almost impossible to completely remove yourself from all the activities of Amazon, given that through web services, almost every website you probably use, including things like Netflix, run right off Amazon. It is a bit inescapable, but I think it's great if people can be a bit more mindful about what they're involved in and consider whether there are alternatives. This goes back, I think, to the early days of Amazon. If you can get a book on Amazon, that's great, but can you get it at the local independent bookstore? Is that something we want to consider doing? These are the same questions we've been asking about Amazon, I think, for a long time.
One more story from an Amazon Fulfillment Center worker. Colleen emailed, "I'm a current fulfillment center stower in Staten Island. People get injured a lot and sent to AmCare, and all they give you is an ice pack. The managers are disingenuous when handling employee issues, and some are just downright mean. To fulfill customers' orders of over 500,000 packages a day, full-time workers work 11-hour shifts 4 days a week with a 15-minute break, a half-hour unpaid lunch, and a 20-minute break in the afternoon. It's modern-day slavery, but they sell people with the high pay rate, $17.75 per hour for New York City." Melissa, where do you think all this is headed? Part of this just feels like another byproduct of our consumer age, where we're willing to look the other way when delivery drivers bring us food through a system that may or may not compensate them fairly, or people may use their cars to drive us around with an app with a system that may or may not protect them from being assaulted, or people work in a warehouse where they're sending us packages the same day, where they may or may not be more likely to get crushed by a forklift. I mean, is this a consumer issue, or where's the linchpin? What's going to make the difference in this?
I think it takes consumers not only holding the company accountable, and indeed, not just through out-and-out boycotting, but even declining the one-day or two-day delivery. I understand poverty is an issue, and not everybody has the option and the mobility to, say, go to a local place, but perhaps it could be over a longer term. And this isn't just an abstract moral issue. When you are opting for one-day delivery, there is an actual human being on the other side of that that is going to be demanded to work at their actual physical limits at length, and especially over the holidays.
It is worth noting that sometimes on Amazon, when you're ordering, same next day delivery can be free, and so can 5 day delivery, oddly enough. So the rush on delivery, you can opt for later delivery and spend the exact same amount of money, which is nothing. Before we go, Hafsa, last thing, what do you want Amazon customers to keep in mind when we're using the service? Speaking as a fulfillment center worker, what do you want us to bear in mind before we go?
What I am asking from Amazon is definitely that we need a worker-elected safety committee, and that is definitely something that's needed so we can be part of the solution. That's all we need right now.
Hafsa Hassan is a worker at an Amazon fulfillment center and a labor rights advocate. Melissa Lewis is a data reporter for Reveal. And Ken Bensinger is an investigative reporter at BuzzFeed News. Thank you all for joining us. This conversation was produced by Arfi Getty with assistance from Stacia Brown and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about our team online at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.